right, we're ready to get started. This is the Elizabeth School District Board of Directors meeting, Monday, April 25th, 2022, working session. And I'm calling this meeting to order. Roll call, please.
Time.
Oh, the time is 4:33. Roll call, please.
Director Blackham.
Here.
Director Booth.
Here.
Dr. Fumfeller?
Here.
Dr. Karcher?
Here.
Dr. Olson?
Here.
All right. Please stand and join me with the Pledge of Allegiance.
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
All right. Are you done, Mitch? We heard you kind of echo. Yeah, all right. Okay, so I'd like a motion to for the approval of the agenda. Additions, deletions, blanket motion.
So moved.
Second.
Okay, all right. And now we're going to be moving into...
Roll call.
Oh, roll call, please.
Dr. Blackham?
Aye.
Dr. Booth?
Aye.
Dr. Fumfeller?
Yes.
Dr. Karcher?
Yes.
Dr. Olson?
Aye.
All right, now we're going to have a motion to go into executive session under CRS 24-6-402-4A for the purpose of considering the sale or transfer of Frontier High School, and under CRS 24-6-402-4B for the purpose of a conference with the board's attorney to receive legal advice on revisions to policies.
So moved. Second.
All right. And roll call, please.
Dr. Blackham?
Aye.
Dr. Booth?
Aye.
Dr. Fumfeller?
Yes.
Dr. Karcher?
Aye.
Dr. Olson?
Aye.
All right.
Okay. Hello, it is 6:04 p.m. This is Kristen Edgar. The board just finished having a discussion with me under 24-6-402-4B for the purpose of receiving legal advice about policy revisions. I'm outside counsel to the school board with Kaplan and Ernest. It is my opinion as counsel to the school board that the entirety of our conversation was for the board to receive legal advice. With that, I hope you guys have a wonderful evening. Good luck with your meeting.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
All right, so we are moving out of executive session. It is 6:05, and we're going to take about a five-minute break real quick and so we can kind of get organized here. So, okay, we're ready. We're going back into our business working session, and it is 6:12 p.m., and next up is Brett from the middle school, and he's going to give us an educational showcase update.
Absolutely. Thanks.
The floor is yours.
Thank you so much. Appreciate you all giving me a few minutes to hear what's going on in the middle school this year. I think it's kind of an advantage having this time of year because we get to really map out a lot of stuff that's happening this year. So I'll kind of go back to the beginning when I first met with the staff. For those of you who don't know, this was my first year as principal at Elizabeth Middle School. One of the first things that I felt, first of all, there's a great feel in the building. Everyone was excited to be back. There's a lot of things that we were looking forward to that we didn't have the opportunity to do in previous years. So I asked them, I asked the staff, what are you most excited about? You know, there's clubs, athletics, all these different things. And it was caught me off guard a little bit, but without question, the top answer was they were excited to see kids' faces again. They spent the whole previous year getting to know these kids so well, like teachers are so good at, and they didn't even really know what they looked like. So I was thinking of maybe doing some slides or something, but in honor of that request, I'd be nice to maybe just give you a little glimpse as to what we saw in our building this year.
That was crazy hair day.
Yeah. There's some good ones. We've had some themed days this year, if you couldn't tell. There's a good 80s day right there. So a few things. Like I said, there's a lot to look forward to at the beginning of this year. To begin with, athletics was a big one. It was really neat to be able to bring that back. There was so much energy at the events, so many kids coming out, even if they weren't participating, to support their friends. And one thing, one of my favorite parts of the year was that we actually had our first ever unified basketball game for our special needs kids. And it was really popular. We had some former Denver Broncos coming down and to help officiate. A lot of kids came out to support their classmates and kind of realized, oh my gosh, this is a really fun event. So at this point, we've committed to it. We're starting a unified program at the school, and we're going to have annual basketball games, but also we're going to incorporate a track and other things that those kids can help participate in as well. We got to bring back our Friday club, so that was a big one as well. Things like ultimate frisbee, golf putting, origami, yoga, some pretty unique offerings. But what I liked a lot about these things that, again, we didn't really have the chance to always do in the last few years is we want kids to be excited about something when they come to school. Right? It translates to every other part. They've got good friends and good teachers and really enjoy their experience. And so these things really, really helped with that. Back in October, we held our Red Ribbon. I know the high school did theirs as well. This was substance abuse prevention. What was really neat, and it'll probably come up here pretty soon if it hasn't already, may have already. But we got to culminate the week with a Black Hawk helicopter landing on our football field that was piloted by the father of two of our eighth grade students.
Oh, awesome.
And so that was just the neatest thing. They were so proud to see Dad come in like that, but it was really neat. And it was anytime we have the opportunity to show appreciation for our armed forces, I think it's a great lesson for the kids. So that was a neat event as well. We brought back our Fright Fest, which is a big Halloween event where we decorate the school, and that was a good one as well. The craft fair was actually one of my favorites, and partly because we'll talk about here in a little bit the impact that HTI has had on our building this year. It's been a big focus for us. But right now, we're in our theme in April and May of entrepreneurial. And at the craft fair, it wasn't just local community members. It was, we had our own kids, our own students there, creating their own products, marketing their own products, and then selling their own products at the craft fair. Things like the birdhouses made out of recycled license plates, for those of you who were there, that was a big popular one. I believe they sold out. And their homemade candles, things like that. So that was just a really neat event because it really did tie into something that was a priority in our building, like I said, the HTI program that we did start up this last year. Pep assemblies was a new one. That was really because we had to keep the grades apart in the past, so that was just, there was so much energy with those. The atmosphere between teams, we have a spirit stick currently hanging over our 8th grade hallway. You visit the building, and they're very proud of that. It was previously over the 7th grade hallway, and in a few weeks we're going to have our final assembly of the year, so we're going to have one more chance to get that. We actually extended our assemblies now from 30 minutes to an hour to try to allow for some games and that sort of stuff, just to kind of take advantage of that positive atmosphere that was created. One of the main new things that we have done this year is we have a new PBIS program. And so this was a big undertaking that involved all of our staff, all of our students. We essentially gave them a list of values. We wanted our PBIS to represent what makes an EMS student, what we value in that school. So we gave probably 80 different values to staff and students. They picked their top five. We took the whole school's data, students and teachers, brought it through our leadership team, cross-referenced it between the two, and they came up with two options. At lunches, we had the kids vote, which of course everyone voted. They were really excited about that. And overwhelmingly, we came up with We Are Cards, which stands for creative, adaptable, respectful, determined, and supportive. And what has worked really well with this is there is a lot of overlap or a strong connection with our HTI that we'll talk about here in a little bit. But if you come into our building now, in the entrance on the right-hand side, you'll see the big We Are Cards banner. You'll see an even bigger one in the gym. And it's worked so well so far because the kids were a part of it, and they've really bought into it. We have weekly drawings, so we have our cardinal cards that we give out. So if a kid's doing something good, we want to recognize positive behavior and kids who are doing the right thing. So they get those cards, and we do weekly drawings at lunches, again, to try to make it public and celebrate the kids who are doing good things. So we have prizes like candy bars, ice cream, gift cards, things like that. And they actually, honestly, the response was better than I thought. They really want to win those drawings. And even the ones who don't, just the act of like giving a card and recognizing someone for doing something, for doing the right thing, we often kind of let that go as, like, hey, you're supposed to do the right thing. But that alone has had, I think, a positive effect as well. The teachers are really embrace that new system. So like I said, the PBIS program kind of tied into our HTI theme. So for HTI, and I know a lot of you, if you're on our visit, already saw some of this kind of stuff, but we do have monthly themes. As I mentioned before, we're currently in entrepreneurial, and we have weekly skills embedded within each one, because these are very broad things, like effective communicators, so big, all the things that go within that. So for entrepreneurial, for example, we have weekly skills that are, for April and May, are vision, problem solving, motivation, taking risks, and innovation. So each week we have that focus We have morning announcements every day that focus on that one skill. And then our teachers have actually started to adopt it, where they incorporate those things, those skills that they want the kids to know, into their warm-ups, into their lessons, into class discussions. And so that it's more of a foundational element of what we do every day. We also, through HDI, have really made an effort to try to create new opportunities, and we'll continue to do so into next year. The morning announcements is one of them, because we actually have kids doing them now. They signed up at lunch. Those who showed interest actually came in and auditioned for it. So we're trying to kind of get kids, some of the kids out of their shell and out of their comfort zone. You can tell some of them doing those announcements to the whole school were pretty nervous that first time. But after a few times, it's almost like it's nothing at this point. So that's worked out real well. We have a new woodshop class. I think the photo's already come up that we had guest speaker Irvin Johnson join us, formerly of the Denver Nuggets, which was really neat. He talked about resiliency and a lot of the things that tie into HDI during that. We have what we call our principal advisory committee this year. So every major group in the school has one leader that represents their group. So student council, WEB, the SAC committee, and that sort of thing. We have five kids all together. Those of you who were on our visit, those were the five kids that you heard on that panel. And they did a phenomenal job during that visit. We were so proud about how they represent our community, because it was neat to hear that it's not just them going along with the program. They've really bought into it and are actually generating ideas on how to make it better. Celebrations that we really tried to kind of make part of our culture this year. I think Teachers of the Month have already come up. Lincoln Jones, 8th grade social studies. Aaron Stone, 6th grade social studies. Shannon Stone, his mother, 7th grade science. Kim Hicks, 6th grade science. Kelly Martiniak, 6th grade reading. David Goldscheid, band and orchestra. And then just today we announced Christine Mayorga, 6th grade math, have all won our Teacher of the Month this year. We'll have one more for May. Another celebration actually was before the year began. We have actually a pretty strong TSA program, which I wasn't aware of until I came in this summer and started meeting with our club sponsors. Last year they qualified for nationals, participated in nationals, and ended up finishing fifth in the nation. So a very strong finish, and they just went to the Colorado, the state competition up in Denver, and did very well. A few first place finishes, a few second place finishes for individual kids. We have a few trophies in our main office if you're by there, but kids did a great job with that. Eighth grade softball did real well. We have a very competitive league that we play in. So we're not always at the top, but the kids play hard, and that was a really tough softball group. They came in first in the standings this year, and then second place in the tournament. We try to continue celebrations throughout the year, peer recognitions through staff meetings. We talk about Cardinal cards. Student of the Month is one of our favorites for anyone who's been there on a last Friday of the month. It's a lot of energy. It's, you know, the teachers getting up and again recognizing the kids for two kids per grade. And we still do our PBIS drawings, so kids are winning prizes, and the speaker's out, the music's on. It's just kind of a fun thing. So it's something that we've tried to do to really create an inclusive atmosphere, and again, celebrating the kids who are doing the good things. And then finally, at the end of this year, we'll be celebrating the careers of Dorcas Hogg, our kitchen manager, and Shannon Stone, who is retiring this year. So very grateful for their work, and we will be celebrating them here in the next few weeks. And I mentioned it earlier, but as of last November, both Shannon's son and daughter now work at EMS, kind of carrying on her legacy, which is really cool. Yeah. Things coming up for the end of the year here. We have our spring field day, our spring pep assembly, which we mentioned earlier, sixth grade party. We're playing for Teacher Appreciation Week, which is next week, by the way. If anyone sees a teacher, you know, maybe give them a thank you for what they do. We're trying to do some gifts and some meals and that kind of thing to thank them next week. We have our fifth grade student and parent visits next week as well. So we're welcoming in Sitting Hills and Running Creek fifth graders to give a tour, get them excited about the opportunities at the middle school. And then Wednesday night, fifth grade parents will invite in to go meet all the teachers and us as well. We have end of year field trips for teams. Sixth grade's going to the zoo, seventh grade's going to Boondocks, eighth grade's going to Eliches. That was our big kind of tradition that we had that unfortunately we couldn't do the last couple years, so we're bringing it back this year, and the kids are pretty excited about
that.
Do you
need chaperones for Eliches?
Yes, we do. Technically, with the way we run it, the parents are the chaperones. It's the day after continuation, so it's technically the school helps. But you know what? If you went, I don't think anyone would argue. We also have discounted tickets, so don't talk to me. We're another thing that I'm really excited about as well is we do have on the books now 8th grade outdoor ed for next year. So that's something that we can do that we are bringing back for first semester for next year's 6th graders. So that's most of what we're looking at as far as celebrations and kind of the climate that's so important to us. It's been a great, I know I'm talking about the staff and students, I just want to say it's been a great year for me personally. For those of you who didn't know, I was a teacher out here 2012 to 2015 at the middle school and the high school, my wife was as well. Decided to go into administration, so I had to leave the district, but since then have moved my family out here and then, of course, jumped at this position. So absolutely love it, and it's absolutely because of these guys, the students and staff, have just been amazing this year. And I'll just end on just a brief thing that I think left the biggest lasting impression on me. In January, we had a lot of absences for students and for staff. It was really hard to do coverage because of all the illnesses. There weren't a lot of people who had to stay out. It is tough to cover during those times, but we would literally have staff members walking into the office saying, I know it's a tough time, what can I do? Do you need me during my plan? Do you need help? And so many of them didn't even need to be asked. So just to kind of convey I'm very grateful for the staff and the hard work they do and how good they are at supporting each other. But that was something that really stood out to me as something that kind of epitomizes the work that they do this year. So that's it. I think we've gone through 3 or 4 times at this point. But there's our TSA crew there at the Denver session as well. So.
Well, Brett, I would like to thank you for your awesome work on HDI and entertaining the whole state or all the participants that came in to look at what Elizabeth is doing, and it was amazing. I left that assembly just with goosebumps. It was just awesome. It was just unbelievable. All the kids were participating. Not just the panel at the end that you had up on the stage, but it was just amazing. So thank you for that. That was just we showed everybody else what good and great is, right? That was, I think so.
Mm-hmm.
Did you were there?
It was quite impressive. Mm-hmm. You thought you were talking to a bunch of seniors at high school.
Oh, yeah?
They were all lined up and answered the questions. So. Adultish, and I loved the when me and Douglas came and toured the school. I haven't been in the school for a few years, but the little changes that you have made, I can see have made a big difference. You know, from the lockers to some of the staff sitting in the lunchroom and stuff, and the celebration. It was very very happy. Very, everybody was all excited, and I think we need a little bit more of that. You know, nowadays in schools, kids to get excited to be at school and to hang out with their friends and get the education that they need. And I was very impressed. On a side note, clearly my son didn't hand me something. When did you say that parent night was?
For fifth grade?
Yeah.
That is this coming Wednesday.
This coming Wednesday.
Next Wednesday, excuse me. Yeah.
Okay, the 4th.
The 4th, yes.
Yeah. All right. Well, Brett, thank you very much.
Absolutely.
We really appreciate your time. That was great.
This was fantastic.
Yeah. I love the slideshow.
I loved it, yeah.
Cool. Well, thank you. I appreciate the time as well.
All right, awesome. All right, we are going to move on and like a motion to approve the minutes from the BOE meeting on April 11th, 2022.
So moved.
Okay. Roll call.
I'm sorry, who's seconding?
I did.
Heather.
Thank you. Director Backham?
Aye.
Director Booth?
Aye.
Director Frumfiller?
Yes.
Director Karcher?
Aye.
Director Olson?
Yes.
All right, and a motion to approve the minutes from the Board of Education special meeting on April 21st, 2022.
So moved. Second.
Roll call, please.
Director Backham?
Aye.
Director Booth?
Aye.
Director Frumfiller?
Yes.
Director Karcher?
Aye.
Director Olson?
Yes.
Great. Thank you. And now we're going to move on to the communications part of this. And I'm excited because we've kind of waited a long time. This is the first time that we've got a bunch of folks from Centennial Mental Health to tell us what they're doing, and I'm just excited to hear all about it. So you guys come up here in front.
Let's make sure you guys.
Thank you.
So we have a crew here.
It's all right.
Thank you so very much.
Good.
And I like that. There's five of us. Lindsay, there's a small crew. Come say hi.
No, Chris.
Join us. Well, thanks for having us. Let's maybe start with just some quick introductions. So my name's Ann Hellstrom, and Douglas and I spoke about 2 weeks ago. I am the Director of Clinical Innovation at Centennial Mental Health, so I'm over our school-based therapy program, and so that's what brings us here today. And so we also have our prevention team.
Hi, I'm Miranda Miller. I'm the Prevention Services Program Manager for Centennial, and I oversee our prevention services in the schools and the community.
I'm Chris Shell. I'm a school-based mental health specialist, a retired social worker, and I've been at with the prevention team for a couple of years now. School social worker. That's the important part.
I'm Jacob Reyes. I'm a prevention specialist in the schools, so I go to the 10 counties that we cover. Singing Hill and Running Creek, I've been doing Riding the Ways and Bop and life skills training there. For Singing Hill, 3rd through 5th, and then Running Creek for 5th grade.
I'm Lindsay O'Kelly, and I'm a school-based therapist.
Well, we put together a packet for you all. We didn't bring a whole PowerPoint, but we have slides, and we thought we would just kind of review. I just want to get a sense of how much time we have allocated so we don't go over our time.
We have you down on the agenda for 15.
Okay, good.
But,
great.
You know, we're flexible. We're here to be educated and informed, so, you know.
Wonderful. Well, we'll just kind of follow along with the slides. We thought we would present the information kind of on the spectrum of care of our services. So we'll start with prevention.
Sounds great. So that first, well, it's actually the second slide on your first page there, talks a little bit about what we do at Centennial. And part of that is around evidence-based strategies, programs, and services. So there are a lot of programs that can come into a school district especially that can teach social-emotional learning. And we have chosen ones that are evidence-based. And we do provide those with high fidelity. There's great reason for that. Research tells us that if we provide a program that has good structure behind it, solid research, that will have good outcomes with our youth. We do collaborate with stakeholders in buildings, building communities of support and promoting life and wellness skills. So we do work a lot with health departments, with IOGs, with other entities like that.
What's an IOG?
An interagency oversight.
So that's Connections for Families.
Okay.
So that's
yes,
Patty.
Thank you.
Okay.
My apology. I will try not to run acronyms today. But if I do, catch me. Stop me right away. We do support efforts to improve capacity of schools, families, and communities to help youth become healthy adults. That's really our goal. From substance use prevention to mental health awareness and to suicide prevention, those are our three main areas of prevention work. And then we do establish systems that connect students, staff, and families to services, kind of that referral pathway, and Anne will talk more about that here in a little bit. And then partners with the creation of safer school environments, just in general, and Chris has a little bit on that as well. On that second page, that is our continuum of care. Like many mental health centers, we do operate from a promotion area, prevention area, where we do spend time doing universal work, making sure that all youth and all community members have access to prevention services. Then as you look into early intervention, outpatient, then intensive care, and recovery, those are very much areas that most mental health centers are very much known for. And so we probably have more structure around the prevention area than other mental health centers do, and truly continue to grow it. We do have 36 school districts in our catchment area, and so we have a 10-county area, and so getting to work across those. Jacob, I was going to have you talk a little bit about some of our actual school-based services.
Yeah, absolutely. So the suicide prevention part, the yellow sticky note, like sources of strength, riding the waves, and team mental health first aid are more of an upstream approach to suicide prevention, more of like, okay, there are going to be some hard times in your life, but how did you get past those the first time, right? Like, how did you get past those another time? Instead of like, oh, I'm so sorry that happened to you, those kind of things, like feeling sorry for someone. It's like, okay, that sucked, that happened. What can we do to help you this time around? So more that upstream approach, and with sources of strength, it's a lot with peer leaders. You have peer leaders that are trained to be peer leaders within the school, and those are fellow students. You also have adult advisors, so it's more of like the peer leaders have the control of like putting situations together, putting like presentations together, activities as well, and it's really a fun way to get them involved with that upstream approach. And the sources of strength wheel has things like healthy activities, mentors, family strengths, those kind of things in our lives that will help us when we're feeling those big emotions as well.
It's in your packet.
Oh, yeah, there you go. Perfect, perfect.
So my last 2 years teaching, we ran this, and it was maybe the best thing I ever did in 29 years of high school.
Awesome. It's really cool to see it when, like, the peer leaders really get involved and, like, really get into structuring things. It's a really awesome thing to see. And with that, with the substance abuse prevention, with the BotVin life skills and Too Good for Drugs especially, it gives people the tools in order to say no and have the self-esteem to say no to situations like substance abuse. Also, just risky behaviors in general, because I feel like that's a big thing where you have that peer pressure happening, but it's giving you those tools in order to help yourself before you get in those situations, or help yourself be assertive in those situations as well.
Yeah, thank you, Jacob. I think what we're doing, too, is passing around some of the materials that we use with our youth and that we do with our adult trainings as well. So just want you to get a glimpse of some of these trainings, what they look like a little bit. And we could spend a lot more time talking about all of them, but we won't. We'll keep on task here and continue into this school care and recovery. Chris?
Did you have a...
I'll wait until we're...
No, okay. Do you want to? Go ahead.
Well, I just, when you're kind of to the school safety piece, and it doesn't relate necessarily to that, but so you have 10 counties. How many districts?
36.
Wow. Okay. So, and there are more staff, right? Okay, good. So you guys are...
Do we look exhausted?
Let me tell you. We're not a large staff, but yes. At any time, we serve approximately about 24 of those school districts throughout the school year.
So I'm just curious, and this can wait, but for the last 2 years, has the emphasis been in your prevention more around suicide in the schools, or is it... is that not an issue, or not even? Well, I shouldn't say that. It's always an issue, but did the dynamics change? I guess over the last couple of years, as you were going through COVID, did you see it?
I would say greatly.
Yeah.
Greatly. Now in Elbert County, did you see it greatly, or because we were talking about the mask mandate, or not the mask mandate, but
I can't necessarily say. What I can say is that Jacob has been serving Running Creek and Singing Hills for some time with some of our programs, so you may be able to speak.
I would say the tide has changed into more of a positive, and just really excited to be there without the mask on as well. This year compared to last year, I felt like it wasn't a lot of participation because the kids didn't feel like their voice was being heard, which created the isolation with the mask on. And there's just like a lot of hard communication in that sense too. They did participate, but this year just felt like a whole different group of kids. And I had some of the same group of kids that I had from third grade, fourth grade, this year too as well. So it was kind of cool to see that transition. And I've seen that throughout the districts, but yeah, I definitely did notice that in Elbert County as well.
Okay. Yeah, I think it made a difference with, the direction we took with not requiring masks this year. And we did everything else right, and it worked really well for us. Brett mentioned, that in January it was a little tough with staff and kids, but that was it, and we got through it. And so I think from our kids' perspective, we were much better off than other districts that weren't quite as flexible, I guess.
And we may have been asked, I don't have a historical perspective, but we may have been asked more frequently to come in and provide some suicide prevention, maybe trainings. Mm-hmm. So we have a couple of curriculums that are specifically for that, that specifically address that. So the Teen Mental Health First Aid, which is one of the books that's coming around, certainly Sources of Strength as far as an entire opportunity for schools to participate with peer leaders and adult advisors, which, you know, I'm glad to hear your experience was very positive. Where were you at?
At the high school.
Yeah.
Oh, here at the high school. Yeah. Perfect. Yes.
Just one thing I want to add is that our prevention programs are offered free of charge to our schools. They are cost covered by grants and contracts. There's a fee associated with, like, sources of strength, for instance, that we can usually get defrayed. It's just a licensing fee.
So we did, actually, Anne and one of our former co-workers started delivering a trauma-sensitive practices within the school setting, some trainings. And so we have been to Elizabeth. You've been very good to invite us. So we've been to the middle school for the first training, and we've presented two trainings for Singing Hills. So we were here in the fall, and then just last week, mm-hmm. or the week before, last week.
Yep.
Yeah, so it was great. We love coming, and the staff have been very engaged in the conversation, and so that's been really, really nice. And we know that the COVID piece of that, even before COVID, but the COVID piece of that really was something that I think raised our level of awareness and concern for some families, particularly. With regard to suicide, suicide deaths, we did have several suicide deaths in our region, and we're called to provide some postvention support in four of the schools, again, closer to Sterling. So we worked with our Northeast BOCE special ed partners in delivering some postvention efforts. And what we found was that we all went in with really great ideas and intentional work about how to support students and staff, as well as contain contagion, but we didn't have a shared vision of what that would look like. So we worked with our BOCES partners and developed a protocol for the postvention response. It didn't have to be with regard to a suicide death. We've had students die in car accidents or from medical things, or we've had staff die from a number of, you know, a right. number of things that happen, you know, in life, and or even just events that cause sort of a traumatic event that might happen within a building or something. So we did, and so I brought it to show you. We just, I felt like show and tell coming in here. But what we found is that it's really hard to go into a school and look at after a suicide toolkit and decide what to do when you're in the moment. We had two of the deaths happen first thing in the morning, and we were on the road within an hour to 90 minutes from our, you know, being alerted to those deaths. So we delivered just a little tote that counselors can use when they're bringing students in for some support. Along with that, we've got some handouts and some informational sheets in here. The other piece of that was really important was documentation, because we know how important that is to make sure that we are keeping track of students that might be seen and follow-up activities that need to happen. And then we developed the protocol and all templates for letters and scripts. A variety of handouts regarding developmental response to grief or trauma are all in this, and we handed these out to our administrators within our Northeast BOCES region. So we found this to be very helpful, and we've had a lot of nice feedback on just having this. Everything is, it's all on a Google sheet, and it's very easy to access the handouts just by clicking the link. So it's all right there.
Our plan is expand into other parts of our catchment area. We started with Northeast BOCES because that's where we had the most exposure to loss and the ability to build the protocol. What I will say is that there's a lot of toolkits that exist out there around how to respond after a suicide death, things like that, and they're hundreds of pages, and to ask an administrator to flip through that to find the information that they need very quickly is virtually impossible. And so to make it a cleaner Google file that people can go to, use what is important to them, what's not important. Like I said, it's not, Chris has said, it's not about suicide all the time, and it's really, truly not. We've had just some other situations happen, and, you know, a child has a seizure in a classroom, something like that. You should be documenting how you're responding, just in general, so.
Yeah, just part of the emergency operation plan, that's part of what is required, right? So, and then also just wanted to mention the Colorado School Safety Resource Center has, they have training and some financial support available for those needing threat assessment training. So that's the STOP grant that you can see on the bottom of that page. Also, the Center for the Study and Prevention of Violence has funding available. So if your staff are not trained with threat assessment, or you have new staff who may need training, or just a retraining, there is some funding available to support that effort. They really want to target rural schools for that. And then Centennial does have a licensed psychologist who's available to do some behavioral health threat assessments.
Thomas, is that Mike that does the threat assessment training for us?
Yes. I mean, he's our director of safety.
Right. Yes. And he would do that.
And it's typically a team. It's typically not one person, you know, it's you. But...
Yeah. Uh-huh. So, over the years, we've had different kinds of threat assessment training. So we brought in John Nicoletti.
Oh, yeah. Nicoletti's probably one of the most world-renowned.
Yeah.
He is.
He's great.
Yep. So, and then flipping the page, you might all be familiar at this point in time with the iMatter program, which the state of Colorado has implemented, that supports up to 6 therapy sessions for youth. And they do have Spanish services, which is a really nice thing. We've really promoted this Colorado Educator Support, which is available for teachers. So it's a website. There's some access to some individual conversations, some groups. It's a nice site to get started with, and it is very supportive of teaching staff. It's not just teachers. It's called Colorado Educator, but any staff person who works for a school district is eligible to access that support.
So the school-based therapy program, we started it 2 years ago, and we piloted it using a telehealth model. So that way we can meet with more kids across those 36 school districts. We started with one, and now we're at 15, and once the MOU is signed with Elizabeth Middle and Singing Hills, we'll be at 17 schools that we're providing in-school therapy. So we've been in Elizabeth High School now for about a year and a half, and we have a telehealth cart where the counselors can make referrals, and then we can provide the services on... they can be at the school, but we're doing telehealth. We are meeting at the end of May to talk about switching that to in-person services with Lindsay. Because we're finding a lot of kids really want that in-person support versus telehealth. I think we're all Zoom exhausted, right? So I think that'll be a really nice shift, and I think it'll promote a lot of engagement, which will be nice. So it's we bill insurance, we can do a sliding fee, so it's not a free service. We have to bill through their insurance. If there is a financial barrier, we work with families on a sliding fee. We do have some funding that can support those services as well. And so that is, we're looking to expand into the middle school in Singing Hills and doing some play therapy at Singing Hills in person, which will be really nice. So that's the school counseling piece.
Play therapy.
Yeah. So with the kids, she gets to play. So yeah, it's really effective with kids under the age of 10 because they don't have the language to really, you know, speak to what's happening in their family or in their body or whatever, and so they speak kind of through a play lens, which is really cool and effective. Yeah.
There's a little rap card in there.
Oh, okay.
Oh, yes. And then I was just going to speak quickly to crisis support. So we've had a lot of struggles this year, I think, with some kiddos, you know, from the middle school and the high school. And so we work really closely with Elizabeth Police Department and the SRO on getting these kids seen as quickly as possible. To answer your question about just kind of like the suicide risk or kind of what we were seeing over the past 2 years, our emergency crisis response went up about 62% with youth over the past 2 years. So we definitely saw a spike. And I think a lot of it was contributed to, I had a 2020 graduate, so you know, he lost out on his varsity year playing baseball, and you know, so I think there was a lot of loss connected to that. But our emergency crisis response is activated through our local office, or the SRO will go ahead and activate kind of that response. Elizabeth PD has this really nice room now. It's very cozy, and it's like a counseling space, and so we'll meet them there. we're trying to see if we can just meet with them on site so kids don't have to leave in a police car, because that can feel a little yucky, right, if their peers see that. So we're kind of working on some different ways to be more trauma-informed around that. In terms of our crisis response, we do a full evaluation to see if they need a higher level of care. So if they're actively suicidal, homicidal, they have a plan, we're probably going to go ahead and recommend a higher level of care to inpatient. Oftentimes, we can safety plan them home and work with the guardians or the parents or any other support people in their life so that they can safety plan home, but then we immediately try to get them into services as quickly as possible, which is what's nice about the school-based services in place, is that they could just start seeing that school counselor. Or school-based therapist. So accessing services, just really quick, we have an outpatient office here in Elizabeth. And so if anybody is interested in seeking services, we work with kids from 3 years old and then all the way through, you know, the aging population. We have, I think we only have...
I resemble that remark.
I wasn't looking at anybody.
It's relative.
So, yeah. So, accessing services, you know, we serve Medicaid, private insurance, private pay, or sliding fee for those services. We also have a mentor program, which is really great for the kids. So, it's basically like a big brother, big sister program, but with a therapeutic lens. And so, they work with them on social skills or, you know, learning to put together a resume, or working with them on interview skills if they want to get a job, and just kind of also being just another support person in their life. And those kids that are involved with the school-based therapy program would also be able to access the mentor. And we have medication management, case management, a whole spectrum of services.
And we do have the, before you flip, so we do have the navigator rep card in there as well.
So this is a newer program over the past year, 2 years. So the navigator team, so the family navigators, they can be accessed even if somebody's not a client. So if they're food insecure or they're struggling with maybe paying for childcare services or something like that, this team kind of can be connecting them to any sort of resources that they might need. So hold on to that. There's the phone number on there.
We do have some housing assistance programs as well as we do have early childhood mental health services as well. So, and then we did add Second Wind Fund on here. They are the payer of last resort, but they can be a paying source if somebody needs therapy, and especially related to active suicide ideation. So...
And that is telehealth. The Second Wind, if you make an application to that, they will connect you with a telehealth provider.
The only other piece in here, too, Chris, do you want to talk about the quarterly synopsis? I think it's just really insightful to see in red are your schools and some of the work that's happened.
Mm-hmm. So some of it is actually services provided in the schools, but your principals, counselors, and superintendents should be receiving in our entire 36 school districts. Area information from us. We pushed out some campaigns in September. We did a campaign for suicide prevention where we are trying to increase awareness, improve skills, offer resources, really looking at making sure that our students and staff have access to trusted adults and trusted resources in order to seek help. And so that really is a strong part of, you'll remember with Sources of Strength, help-seeking behaviors. And hopefully reducing stigma with that regard. We just finished up alcohol awareness campaign for the month of April. We did push out some information during during Red Ribbon Week, bringing to light information about drug use and
Can I make a comment about Red Ribbon Week? Mm-hmm. We were at the HTI presentation at the middle school. And over the speaker, I don't know how often, but it...
Every hour. No, it was more than every hour.
Well, they did it at the...
Oh, every half hour too. Then.
Yeah, announced a student that had, you know, not names, but, you know, passed away.
They knew. Jane.
But they weren't. Then they weren't real scenarios.
No, they weren't. They were made up.
But they were made up names. Right. But Kim's over there going, I start crying. And I was in the nurse. I was like, and I'm like, oh my gosh, it's real. You guys stop talking. Did you hear what happened?
That's Oh my so, god! Anyway, I just I didn't cry, but I welled up. Uh-huh. You know, I don't I don't cry. I just welled up.
I did.
You did. She did. Oh. Anyway, sorry.
Oh, Lord,
I digress.
So we have had just Riding the Waves
and Botvin
and the trauma informed here in Elizabeth. So very happy to be able to come and deliver that. And then
tentatively, I've been talking to Singing Hills about doing like coping skills for fifth graders. So it's about like square breathing, using our imagination. I always go like this with the kids. I almost did that right there. Imagination, like SpongeBob. But those kind of things like that can help kids when they're feeling those big emotions, but they are like in the classroom, like even asking a teacher if I can go for a walk, you know, those kind of things. But like stuff in the classroom, because sometimes if you're feeling really anxious about something, even at fifth grade or earlier on, it can feel like everything's closing in on you. So what are some things you can do to help yourself in those situations? So that's one of the things with like Riding the Waves, that program, and I have incorporated with coping skills just to make it more like what you can do in the classroom with those things.
So I think I have on this, you can see we have quite a few schools who are using Sources of Strength, and we did train this year, so that was exciting for us as well. I had counted, and I left that all out in the car, how many schools we have using Botvin or Too Good for Drugs. And Riding the Waves.
That's
I counted all of those, and there are a lot, you know. So it's just, you don't see that on here, but we wanted you to see that we are, you know, trying to reach as many schools as possible in providing some prevention services.
Yeah, and I forgot to mention, too, Teen Mental Health First Aid. I forgot to mention that one, talking about the services. So that's for 10th to 12th graders, and that's for the students themselves to get trained on how to help their friends when they're having a mental health crisis or a challenge, and knowing the difference of that. And also, we talk about, like, let's say you need to put someone in a recovery position, because, you know, we hope that never happens, but if it does happen, what do you do? And we talk about it's okay to call the police officers because you're in a, like, a situation where life's on the line kind of thing. So it's those kind of things, and what's the difference between challenge and crisis, and how we can help, and how trauma affects people differently. And so they're certified themselves, and it can be used, you know, from then on out. It's just as important, I feel like, as CPR and first aid is when we're talking about that, but with mental health as well. So I forgot to mention that one earlier.
And really talking about trauma-informed anything that we do. Especially we approached a lot of anniversaries this past school year of deaths or traumatic events, and we pushed out quite a bit of information about how do you do that? You know, how do you honor those who need to memorialize in some ways a loss, but a memorial isn't always the thing to do, you know, so we want to be really intentional about what happens in schools and supporting these people along the way. And then just to say this very last little slide on the bottom here, finally, what's going well. And we really do want to make sure that we're not just coming and bringing, selling you something. It should match what the needs are in your community and in your school. So hopefully what we have are a variety of ways that we can support your schools. And if it's not something that we do, we're happy to help you look. You know, to find something that either we can help do or enlist the help of somebody else in the state or the region to do so.
Just a little information about our website is on the last page here. We are going to have a more robust webpage that's devoted to prevention, and then our contact information, Ann's email address, and then the prevention email address is on there that goes to all of us in prevention. So.
Wow.
That was a lot of information.
I know, yeah. You guys. And,
you know, this is perfect.
Drinking from a hydrant, right?
But it's very informative, and I didn't know. So yeah. I appreciate you guys coming in. And Anne, Randa, Chris, Jake, right? Mm-hmm.
Jacob.
Lindsay. Cool. Mm-hmm. Yep. Guys, thank you very much.
Can I ask one question before they go?
Yeah.
You talked about being informed. You talked a lot about trauma-informed. Can you say a little bit more about what is it to be trauma-informed?
Sure. So,
what is that?
It's
kind of ambiguous term.
So the whole idea of trauma-informed or trauma-sensitive is really looking at a situation, looking at a person through a lens of understanding you don't know their whole story. So when we do the trauma-sensitive practices in the school setting, we talk to teachers about, you know, you might have a kid that's just driving you crazy, and you're like, what is going on, right? And so looking at behaviors or emotional responses through a lens of, like, what is this person's story? what have they survived? What are they currently going to that could be prompting this response? When we did the training at Singing Hills a couple weeks ago, we ordered these like heart-colored glasses for everybody to wear, and we're like, think about it through literally a different set of lenses of like, we do this activity where it's like before you might label the behavior as like manipulative or avoidant or resistant. And then afterwards, after the training, we talked about like, now how do you see it? Is it more like unsure, insecure? And instead of this idea of the attention seeking, it's attachment seeking. You know, if kids are really trying to get the attention of an adult, it means they're trying to attach to a safe person. So that's really kind of overall what it means to be trauma sensitive. And it can be hard. You know, you have a classroom full of 30 kids and you've got one or two and you're like, I need you guys to hold it together, please.
And like, you can assume.
Right, exactly.
That, you know, this behavior is for whatever reason, right. But it may be a lot deeper than that.
And, exactly. Yeah, so we just encourage like different questions to ask or how to connect with the parents. And we talk about how does trauma affect parents? You know, those parents you can never get a hold of, or like you're trying to, I mean, this sounds familiar, right? Where you're trying to like connect the parents to, you know, a teacher or an IEP meeting, and why we have a hard time. And it's like, what's their story? We don't know that parent's experience. So that's kind of a good example.
So it's our students, is it, just a handful of students that have experienced trauma, or have a lot of students experience trauma?
So, well, if you would have asked me that in 2019, the percentage would have been lower. But I think definitely through COVID, it's gone up. You know, and we talk about trauma in through a lens of like little T traumas and big T traumas, right? Mm-hmm. Like the loss of a parent or abuse or neglect is, of course, like those big T traumas. But the little T traumas could be, you know, like, I mean, bullied through like social media, or, you know, a breakup can be traumatic to a teenager. And so it could be kind of any number of things. But statistically, the latest statistics that I presented on is 70% of kids 18 and younger have experienced some sort of traumatic event. Now, traumatic is really defined based on like really what the effect of that event had on a child, but it could be a divorce, it could be loss of a parent, it could be, you know,
a move. It could be loss of a pet.
Loss of a pet could be traumatic. Absolutely, yeah.
So even though, you know, we think of mental health and we can think of trauma as sometimes intense or whatever, but a lot of our students are experiencing, they experience, for example, loss or uncertainty, around, say, the parents fighting, and so they act out in the classroom, and the teacher might label it negatively, like you said.
Right.
But if they're sensitive to, you know, this might be a manifestation of some trauma, I'm more sympathetic rather than judgmental. So how do I recognize what's happening in the context of they may be experiencing some trauma? How can I not exacerbate that trauma, but help support and care, trauma-informed care.
Exactly.
And I think some of that is evident in discipline, you know, when we suspend and expel, you know, those kinds of situations when we can be more, I don't know what your policy is here or how often that happens, but that separating students from resources and systems that can be supportive of them. So whatever it is that can be in a discipline procedure can often re-traumatize a child and keep them away from the supports that they need. So whenever something like that happens, we just want to make sure kids have, or students have, what they need in order to heal and be able to come back. The other piece of that too is just like when we do lockdown drills, or when we're leaving the building, whatever it happens to be, however, whatever standard response protocol you use, many students can be traumatized by the act of the drill itself. So the alarms going off, having to hide in closets, those kinds of things. So we want to make sure that students who need the preparation, well, all students should have some preparation for what's going to happen, but then for those high-risk or vulnerable students, we want to make sure that they have what they need. Mm-hmm. And you sound very well informed about all of the all of the work that needs to happen around
So it would it be fair to say it's one of the one of the critical kind of frames and kind of expertise that you bring. It informs a lot of what you do.
Absolutely. I would say in probably the past, like, 5 to 10 years, we've really seen kind of this emergence and this understanding why it's so important to be trauma-informed in any system. I do the presentations with Chris to our schools, but I also do them with primary care clinics and community agencies like DHS. I just did Elbert County DHS. I did their trauma training. Just because, like, every system, the more we can educate and inform, the more we kind of see people through kind of that different lens. And you said it beautifully, just being more compassionate, less judgmental. And then that also invites them to come and talk to a safe adult. You know, if the adult is sitting in a place of compassion, then they feel safer to say what's really going on.
Well, I'll echo the thank you for coming.
Yeah, thank
especially
you.
All of you in the evenings. Awesome. For all your work, I know it's been well received at our school.
Good, yeah. Good.
They've really gotten kind of a, when I talk to them after, they're like, oh, so good.
Yeah. Good. Well, thank you for having us. And if you guys have any follow-up questions or need to connect any of your administrators or leaders to us, feel free to share.
You're located here in Elizabeth?
We have an outpatient office here, right on Main Street, right off of Main Street.
Just down there.
Mm-hmm.
Three blocks.
Yep.
Nice.
Yeah.
Cool.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate it.
Thank you, guys.
Have a great day. And
you too.
Or what's left of it, right?
Right. I'm going to leave this in case you guys need another packet.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Can I get
it?
I think,
is that, does that
have to be?
I was going
to say,
I have.
Inside, yeah.
This one. Okay, cool. Poor Tammy didn't get a chance to say anything.
Poor Tammy didn't get a chance to say
anything. Didn't get a chance to say anything.
Look at her suffering.
So happy with that. Are you?
See, she said something.
Yeah.
She said bye-bye.
And I smiled.
Well,
great.
Thank you.
Thanks for being here.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Oh, you had a long day.
Yeah.
Take a stretch.
We're not yet traumatized.
Not yet.
Small T.
Yeah. Small T. Yeah. Boy, I could relate sometimes to that. You know?
today's
been one of those
life
for
and
me.
Carrie's world.
All right, Douglas, you're up.
Yeah. Let's see. Later in the agenda, we're asking you to approve board president's signature on the co-action grant, and this is something that we have brought to you before, and then we brought it back because we wanted to take more time and apply under a different time frame. And one of the things that we needed to work more on was the kind of understanding of the partnerships between Elizabeth School District, Elbert School District, and Kiowa School District, which we've had at least 3 pretty extensive meetings, and then communication between those meetings for this grant that would enable and support the enhancement of some of our work-based or career-oriented programming in each of our schools, and then the ability for students to take courses, even if, say, if they're an Elbert student, to take a class in Kiowa or in Elizabeth, and vice versa, and to provide transportation to make it more easier for students to do that. So it kind of become a 3-campus partnership rather than just each of us having our programs. So,
how does that overlap with the schedules?
90%.
Oh yeah, that's good.
I mean, they don't. They each have a 4-day week. We have a 5-day week. So there's. So if they have, like, no school on Friday, but we have a class, and the student would be expected to come to the class. So there's those are some of the details that we need to work out. Things like course credit and graduation requirements, how to meet those, any kind of prerequisites. There's a lot of work kind of logistical work that needs to be done. The grant would support that in this next semester, where students would first be able to take advantage of opportunities within the districts in January of 2023. The question mark for probably 6 weeks, maybe, through this was, were we going to be able to include opportunities at Cherry Creek Innovation Campus as options for our students? And on Friday afternoon, I met for a couple of hours with their, let me just see, get her title correctly here. Sarah, hold on a second, because she has a long but relevant title. She's the Assistant Superintendent of Career Innovation and Student Engagement, and one of the things she oversees is their Innovation Campus. And we had reached out, I had reached out to the superintendent. He'd given the thumbs up that, yes, Elizabeth, Albert, and Kiowa students could take advantage of courses at their Innovation Campus. And then we weren't able to, all three of us, meet, so then I met separately with Sarah Grobel, who's the assistant superintendent, to review the grant application with her. And some of the details to include in the grant application, because we didn't want to have a grant application saying, you know, Cherry Creek's a partner, but we don't know too many of the details. So she's given us feedback, both language that we can put in terms of the opportunities, but also gave us some nice feedback on other aspects of the grant. And she's been with them from the very beginning of their Innovation Campus. I mean, she's been with Cherry Creek Schools for a number of years. I think maybe started in 98 in Cherry Creek Schools. But with this particular project for the last five or six or more years. And it was Cherry Creek's intention to make their campus available to students outside the district. So this is not something that they're doing as a favor, per se, making an exception, but they welcome this kind of partnership and to provide these.
What kind of courses do they teach at this innovation? Just
they have a structure that's a pathway structure. And I can send you a link. They have a new facility near the Centennial Airport.
Yeah, I've driven by it and I've always wondered
what they do in there.
What went on there, yeah.
So that campus serves all Cherry Creek students. They bus their students there for courses that are only taught at that campus. So it's not a permanent campus. Nobody, if you go to Grandview, you go to Grandview and you might take one or more courses at that campus. So they have pathways. One, and bear with me that I may not be 100% correct on what they call the pathways. But they have a healthcare pathway that includes a CNA program and at least another certificate. They have a construction capability.
Career-oriented.
Their innovation campus, so it's career-oriented. Yes, every course they offer leads to either a certificate or, I believe, concurrent credit. Every course. So they have culinary. They have two incredible industrial kitchens. They have a hospitality. And I don't know whether that's culinary is part of a hospitality pathway or hospitality is part of a culinary pathway, but anyway. Aviation and I'll call it aviation, but they have drones. I don't know how far into aerospace they go, but like you can take the basic aviation course required by Metro State if you're in their aviation program. They have a robotics. Well, it's not robotics. They have an advanced manufacturing program, and they have industry partners in many of these pathways. Then they have another one that I believe, I don't know if it's STEM, but they invent stuff. They've even gotten at least one patent on something they invented that was to help emergency responders with a new capability. If someone's unconscious in an accident, they can inject, I don't know what, I forget what it is, into the bone marrow, and it'll wake them up and make it easier for the emergency responders to extract the individual from the vehicle rather than their... But you really have to do it with a lot of force. And so they created a femur, muscle tissue, all this that can be used for training emergency responders of how to do it. And then they patented it. So they designed it, they created it, and they included patent. So they have an automotive program that includes even some work on race cars. They have a beautiful facility. I know I may be forgetting at least one, but they believe they have 7 pathways and then various courses within those pathways. So it could be that a student takes 1 or 2 culinary courses in Elizabeth High School. So just thinking of Elizabeth High School students. And then they take another culinary, more advanced culinary course at the Innovation Campus. And then they're really excited about that. Then they could take a hospitality course, right? And complete that. Or same thing with automotive. They might be able to do something in construction there that we don't have here. So the same thing for Kiowa and Elbert students. They even expressed some interest maybe of some of their students, like for example, Elbert has an ag program, and their part of the grant includes a greenhouse. And maybe even sending students this way. I don't think we can include that in the grant because the grant needs to serve rural students, but we just wouldn't include any costs in it, but we could have that partnership. When we were meeting, Sarah was listing off, oh, and your students could also take advantage of this and that. So we went with a specific kind of interest. And she said, well, there's some things happening in the evening, things happening in the summer, kind of peer collaboration for teachers. So our culinary, Kyle or Albert's culinary, and their culinary, a couple times a year, whatever they find, could get together. And, you know, what are you doing here? What are you doing there? How can we better prepare students? But a lot of times there's one or 2 teachers, and there's not a lot of collaboration in an area. So like our automotive, to work with and learn from and exchange ideas with there. So professional development, peer collaboration from the teachers is another opportunity with this. Am I forgetting anything big? I've covered it kind of right. So I just wanted, that was Friday afternoon from 3 to 5. And it was really the last, I mean, the grant's due a week from Monday. And it was the last big conversation to be able to know that they know what we're talking about. They know what this grant is. They're a full partner in it. And the time frame and that we would need to do work in terms of how their counselors would work with our counselors enrolling kids, you know, all the legwork that needs to happen for students to take advantage of this. So, you know, for some of you that know Pickens Tech, it's, you know, it's a version of Pickens Tech, in a sense more accessible for a wider range of students, and especially ones that really know what pathway. I want to say one last thing about the pathways, because we've discussed pathways. You may have heard about pathways, maybe even seen a draft document a year ago that talked about some different pathways. We have backed off of pathways in the sense of students choosing pathways. That's what Canyon Cities does. The students have to choose a pathway, and then there's a kind of like choosing a major in college, but then also, you know, you can change. We've really framed it at this point as more career exploration. And it really aligns with how they're approaching their pathways, because while they define pathways, a student might be taking courses in two or three different pathways based on their interests. And they gave me some examples, you know. Drone flight and advanced manufacturing, just in different interests. And that their pathways, how they talk about their pathways, it's... I got to look it up. Sorry. Because it's pathways of passion. Pathways of passion. So it's like, okay, that sounds good. What is pathway of passion? And where's the emphasis? Is the emphasis on a pathway or is the emphasis on passion? The emphasis is on passion. It's like pathways of passion. Developing passion. Not developing, but fostering passion in kids. The high school kids especially, they can lose their passion for learning, for school, kind of for their engagement, and they become disengaged. They don't see the relevance of classes. So the focus is really have passion, develop passion for pathways that are meaningful to you. Not like a, you know, okay, here's the healthcare pathway, and we're going to put you into a pathway. What's more important is the passion, and if you have a passion for taking care of people, and you like science, and you are willing to like interact, you know, or the vet thing. So I think it fits nicely with how we're thinking. It's not about these tracks, but more about student engagement, student interest, and getting students to see what else is out there. So one of the possibilities would be taking students to the Innovation Center, give them a tour and saying, you know, this is what learning looks like if you're building, you know, a house. They have to, and they get graded on professionalism, 30% of the graded, and they have to wear uniforms. They all have to wear a uniform appropriate to their pathway. They have to use certain kind of professional language relevant to what the pathway is, and so anyway, it's really an exciting opportunity, and we think that it helps give the grant application a much better chance of being approved. I also last week was able to speak with the individual at CDE who's in charge of the ESSER money and grants. He doesn't sign off on the grants, but he knows them deeply. Told him about this grant and what we were looking at, and he just beamed. It's like, that's exactly what we're looking for. And it's great. And he says, you know, if there's anything I can do, which we should reach out to him maybe, and his Scott, I had forgotten about that, to just get as a kind of to touch base. One of the things that will be in the grant is an application for the ILOT program, which is flexibility and seat time, which is needed if kids are, you know, out of school more. And Sarah from Cherry Creek was on an outside review committee for ILOP applications, and she said, I'm glad to help with that. That wouldn't be due till sometime in December, but we're putting that in the grant as part of the component. It'll give us some points, but we haven't really needed it so far, that kind of flexibility. But the more flexible we get.
We did have one student who was Pickens, and then Cummings Engines was teaching an internship on diesel, and we were able to strike a deal where he could come in 3 days of school, gather work, catch up on work, talk to teachers, but spend a lot of his time working on that program. Mm-hmm. So we've done that on a small scale.
Right.
And it was amazing. It was
It makes so much of a difference for the students, and I think the more that kids are doing that, I mean, you all got a taste of that with HTI. And it really it reframes school for a lot of kids. They're already talking at the middle school about what they might be interested in the high school, and thinking about their courses that they select for high school a little bit differently to have some coherence around areas of interest, areas of passion, and then the opportunity to experience what it might be like outside of school, not just to sit in a classroom, but to be out doing things. And the power of what they can learn. A lot of the graduate competencies, especially our high schoolers, believe that the best place where they can learn those is, for example, in an internship. versus in a classroom. Independent learner, sure, in school, but when you're out there at the internship, you know what? adaptable and resilient. It's like they show up. It's like they're not necessarily experts in dealing with a student intern. I mean, they're willing and they have a structure, but you need to assume some responsibility for being persistent to, okay, what do I do next or whatever. So anyway, that's the big update beyond the class size report. The class size report is something that we bring to the board twice a year. It just gives you data on general numbers. We have average class size, we have student-to-teacher ratio. You see those two things are different, and then you look at the specific breakdown of different classes, and you see, each number or set of numbers gives you a different picture into the schools. The biggest takeaway, well, there's two takeaways, is across the board, the number of, I'll call them small class sizes, 20, 21, 22, 17, 18, I mean, there's just so many classes that are, say, under 25, and that the vast majority of our students and the vast majority of their classes are in, they're not 30 or 35, with the exception of Elizabeth Middle School and a number of the core classes. At the high school level, a PE class or an orchestra, that might actually be beneficial to have more. There's one class, I think it's World History, that does have, I think, 31, something like that, but it's really minimal. They have a greater ability to flex the sizes just to arrange. The middle school, as you know, is more fixed because they just have one math, one science, one writing, one reading, and one social studies teacher per grade. And so they can't flex. So if they get more seventh graders, those class sizes go up. The teachers have been fantastic in dealing with that this year. They haven't been complaining about it. They've really been embracing it. It's been phenomenal. So when Brett was talking tonight about those teachers, I mean, hats off to them, because they could easily have said, oh, poor us. They work together. They support each other. They get the reality. It's not, it is more of a challenge.
Bless you.
I think that they're planning to add two teachers for at least, I think, one or two grade levels to have like a team and a half. And so one teacher would be teaching social studies and I think language arts, and then another teacher would be teaching math and science to be able to accommodate more students but still preserve the team of, you have a team of teachers teaching the grade level. Right. And they can meet and they can talk, and the students are within that cohort of teachers, and so it for them gives them there's a lot of value in having the same students rather than the kind of a more high school model where you have a teacher that might be teaching two or three grade levels and the students are more, and it's just much harder to collaborate. What are we doing for the grade level, because you got teachers teaching different grade levels, students with teachers in different places, and they experimented with that a few years back. It just didn't really work. So they're really committed to this model, but this is a shortcoming of this model, is it doesn't flex easily. So anyway.
Does that have the class sizes, how have those impacted the students? Have you noticed any impact on them as far as the size versus?
I haven't seen any. They haven't seen any. I mean, it's more work for the teachers.
Yeah.
But the teachers, it's there's more grading, there's more classroom management issues. But the culture, I mean, you saw the middle school, you saw maybe even some of those classes when we went to visit.
Yeah.
They're doing a good job with classroom management.
Oh, yeah.
And
I'm just talking about the students, has it affected their learning far as having more students in the class versus a little bit more one-on-one?
They'll have a more informed perspective on that question next year, unfortunately, when they get their CMAS results back. Mm. And they're able to see, was there a difference between larger class sizes and smaller class sizes? They are doing MAP testing. I don't know what those results are in terms of that kind of a comparison. But when I've talked to teachers, when I've talked to Brad, it's not, they're hasn't been an issue. It's just more a matter of sometimes a lot of kids in a small space, that kind of thing. And, they don't feel uncomfortable together. So, it's not like it's impacted their, they're engaged and they're kind of, if you look in a classroom with a lot and fewer students, you don't see anything different in terms of they're less or more engaged or more chaotic or not. So I don't have any evidence of anything, but that doesn't mean it doesn't exist. We'd have to wait to see some of those other results that are more standardized.
So, okay, I'll just throw this out there. What I did notice on those numbers, a lot of things, especially at the high school, the lower level college prep classes were bigger. CP 100, CP 200, all sciences, bigger in number.
When you say bigger, you mean bigger than the average?
Yeah.
Or?
Yeah. And so those high end kids, it's almost like we need to give them smaller classes so that the teachers can really identify how to move them along further. Because when it's a bigger classroom, things get kind of homogenized. And so the teacher, because of the size, is trying to teach to the largest group possible. And so some of those kids at the top end get left behind, or they get bored. And so I always worry about the big sizes in those types of classes.
Yeah. I agree. I don't... the schedule in at the high school is an incredible Rubik's Cube because you're dealing with three basic variables. The students, the teachers, and the space. And then time across everything. And then on top of that, graduation requirements. So the earlier years tend to be fulfilling requirements. And the ability to have smaller classes is predicated on having more staff to have more flexibility.
And that's more money. And yeah, the domino effect is very apparent. Yeah.
Yeah. And so the trade-off that the district has been dealing with since the recession, so it's really around, kind of started in 2009-10 when we had to be cutting, and we cut for a decade. Is compensation versus the number of staff. The more staff you have, that means less compensation. But the more that you compensate staff, then you have fewer people, but that means more work for staff. And trying to find that balance, it's just... and sometimes it gets out of balance, and then we say, well, we just need to hire more people, and that would... The best, clearest, simplest example is the middle school. The high school is more dynamic just because it's just more complicated because many teachers teach multiple grade levels, and you're dealing with the graduation requirements. But
do you see that bubble that's occurring at the seventh grade? Obviously, they're addressing it next year at the eighth grade. Do you think that just kind of goes away when it gets to the ninth grade? The way that where the number of classes and types of classes.
So the class size, I mean, based on the kind of enrollment projections and that come from professionals, the size wouldn't necessarily go away, especially as we're growing. If we were shrinking, it might shrink so that it's not out of the norm, but the impact will be different when they get to ninth grade. And I honestly don't know whether more kids in the ninth grade is going to be more helpful because you can do an extra section. And then, so instead of three sections, you can have four sections and you have smaller class sizes. But I don't know how a greater number would impact their planning when they get to ninth grade.
You're talking about the larger number in the seventh grade.
Correct. Plan,
so. Right. I would say that it's going to be larger in eighth grade. That's what we're planning. And then when they get to the high school, that they would be larger than the classes before them. But whether it would result in negative impact on class sizes, I don't know. I don't even know whether somebody like Carl Zander, who's done a lot of work on scheduling, or Brett, who's been doing it for a very long time, they might have an intuitive sense of not just what a larger class size does, but in their system. Especially with the new classes that we're offering, it also makes it more unpredictable. And whether that,
offsets the numbers from the other ones.
Yeah, whether there's more options, whether it leads to some smaller class sizes in some of the core because there's another class that they could take instead of that. And they're still putting it together, so I don't know that we could even ask them to spitball it and say, what do you think? But I think that's a change to the system to add that many new courses. And it's a change as well to get kids out of the school. Although those numbers are still not, I would say next year, this year I think we have 35 interns. And whether they're all, but if we got to 75, 100 kids, that's gonna change a little bit too.
Yeah, right.
So I think we just have to see. So I get the concern, Craig, but I don't know. There isn't an easy answer of how to make sure that those.
I think awareness, and I think obviously we all know that there's that bubble that kind of showed up this year.
Yeah.
So knowing that's in front of us.
Yeah. Thank you.
You good? Awesome. Thank you, Douglas. Appreciate it. We're actually doing pretty good here. All right, we're going to move
so far
on to
so
the,
good.
Yeah, so far so good. We're going to move on to the consent agenda.
I'm still young. We got snacks.
Yeah, we do. We do, and I've been trying to, my cheeks are kind of thin, so you can hear the
crunch, crunch. Oh. It's always louder in your own head.
Yeah. Yeah, is it? Yeah, that's true. Although she said she can hear me. Yeah. Consent agenda. Can I get a motion to approve 9.1 through 9.3?
So moved.
Second.
All right. Thank you. And moving on to action items.
Roll call.
No, we don't do roll call. Do we? Okay.
You just don't do good discussion. That's the purpose.
That's right. Roll call, please.
Director Lacto.
Aye.
Director Booth.
Aye.
Director Frumfeller.
Yes.
Director Carter.
Aye.
Director Olson.
Aye.
Damn. Just for a point of clarification, the consent agenda is things that just don't have discussion.
Right.
So those are put in there. If a board member ever wants something in consent to discuss it, ask before the meeting to have it pulled, and it would just be moved to action, and then you could discuss it there. It's not meant to prevent discussion. It just meant if there's no discussion, then it's just administratively, boom. It's
thank
easy.
You. That hit me this week, too. What's the difference? So yeah.
Right.
Thank you.
There is no discussion on those. But it doesn't mean that
you
can't have discussion on them. The way to have discussion is to ask for it to be pulled from consent when the agenda is being, it's best to say in advance, and then when the agenda is being approved, to pull something from consent, put it as an action item, and then you have the ability to discuss it. But hopefully everybody knows that you want to discuss it and what you want to discuss so that
in advance
have
yeah.
An intelligent discussion about it, especially if staff need to answer questions.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. All right. Now, 10.1, I'm looking for a motion to table 10.1 as we have additional items that are going through disposition that we are going to discuss in a future board meeting. Probably, I think May 9th is the... No, it's not. Not May 9th.
Won't be ready.
Future board meeting.
Before end of the year.
Before the end of the school year, right.
Well, the end of the fiscal year.
Okay. All right.
So moved.
Okay.
Second.
All right. Any discussion? Roll call, please.
Director Blackham.
Aye.
Director Booth.
Aye.
Director Frumfeller.
Yes.
Director Carter.
Yes.
Director Olson.
Aye.
All right, motion to approve 10.2, resolution authorizing an increase in the middle school athletic participation fees. Motion to.
So moved.
Second.
Okay, discussion?
I have a question on this. For the participation fees, are all levels able to participate? Do we know? We don't know.
So do you mean by all levels, all grade levels?
All grade levels.
In the middle?
What do you mean? So sixth grade doesn't have the same as seventh and eighth grade. Right. So they don't have the ability to participate, sixth graders.
I think there's
So there aren't the same number of sports offered. But I do know in the past that some sixth graders have been allowed to play with at the seventh grade team if they meet coaches' expectations. So I don't know.
But the sixth graders are, they still are paying the administration fees. I mean, the fees. The
sixth
graders.
Only if they're participating in the athletics, right?
Yes. So the athletic fee is only if they participate.
Athletic fee, I'm sorry. I just saw somebody post something, and that was my question. Because I just didn't know the answer to that. I couldn't remember.
Did my answer your question or not?
So if I had a sixth grader that I pay the athletic fees for, and say, what's a...
But they can't participate in...
The only reason you pay an athletic participation fee is if they're going to be in...
one or two, I think that's...
I think they do track. They are in track.
Track, so they and would, I think wrestling. Oh, track and wrestling are the two sports that you can do as a sixth grader. If you're not participating in a sport, you're not paying this fee.
Now, is it per sport, or is it just...
Yes, it is per sport.
Okay.
So, I know that in the past there's been some interest on the part of sixth graders to be in football. I don't know if that's continued, so... Pardon me?
A little risky, depending on...
No, but some of them are growing and they're interested and they want to do tackle and they've been doing...
And their brother's in eighth grade and they're like, bring it on.
But it evolved a little bit through COVID. So I know that we were expanding programs for sixth grader because some parents were making choices of whether to attend Elizabeth Middle School or Douglas County Middle Schools based on their children's ability to participate in athletics at sixth grade. And so we expanded what was available to sixth graders.
But EPR still offers certain sports to sixth graders, I believe.
Well, and younger. But So I just can't. But the only time that somebody's going to be paying a fee is if they're participating
in
a sport.
Yes. Okay.
Yes. That makes sense.
Do you know if they offer family rates? So, you know, I can think of a few families over the years have four kids playing three sports during a year. Do they ever look at individual family cases?
Yes, but I can't answer that question.
Okay. You did.
Okay.
All right. Roll call, please.
Director Lockham?
Aye.
Director Booth?
Aye.
Director Fromfeller?
Yes.
Director Kircher?
Aye.
Director Olson?
Aye.
All right. 10.3, motion to approve concurrent enrollment expansion and innovation grant application.
Okay. So moved.
Second.
Any discussion?
That's just for this particular grant and these programs specifically.
Yes. Okay. All right. Roll call, please.
Director Lockham?
Aye.
Director Booth?
Aye.
Director Fromfeller?
Yes.
Director Kircher?
Aye.
Director Olson?
Aye.
All right. Motion to approve 10.4 rural co-action grant application.
So moved. Second.
Any discussion? Roll call, please.
Director Blackham?
Aye.
Director Booth?
Aye.
Director Fromfeller?
Yes.
Director Kircher?
Aye.
Director Olson?
Aye.
All right. Motion to approve 10.5, and this is the second reading of revised policies, GDQD, discipline, suspension, and dismissal of support staff, GCQF-R, discipline, suspension, and dismissal of professional staff, mandatory reporting requirements, GDQB, resignation of support staff, GCQC/GCQD-R-resignation of instructional staff, administrative staff, mandatory reporting requirements, regulation, IKF 2022 graduation requirements, graduating class of 2022 and beyond, and GBEB staff conduct and responsibilities.
I'm sorry, could you repeat those all for
me? I missed the first one.
So move.
Second.
All right, any discussion?
Yes, I believe it was one, and I forgot to write down the code number. In one of them, it mentioned Ken Schumann specifically. If we're having an ongoing policy, shouldn't it just be the human director, the director of human resources?
It specifically, you have to say the name. Oh. The requirement is...
Yeah, I was going to say, it was a specific request to the civil audits.
So it's a civil rights requirement.
Okay.
So what the request was from the Office of Civil Rights. Or, I mean, it's their expectation.
So there were signs, we just changed the name.
Correct, it would be revised.
Okay. And there was another name in there also, wasn't there? Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay. Well, that's good. That's good to know. Okay.
Yeah, I think that because, like, if you just say HR director, then people go, like, who's that? But if you say Ken Schumann or whatever the name is, then they know, I need to talk to this person.
Right.
And it just makes it easier for someone that has a complaint.
Okay.
Interesting. What's required in these documents? All right. Roll call, please.
Director Blackham?
Aye.
Director Booth?
Aye.
Director Frumfeller?
Yes.
Director Karcher?
Aye.
Director Olson?
Aye.
All right. 10.6, first and final reading of revised policies, JLCD, administering medication to students. JLCD-R, administering medicines to students regulation, and JLCD-E, permission for medication.
So moved.
Second.
Any discussion? Okay, roll call please.
Director Blackham?
Aye.
Director Boone?
Aye.
Director Frumfeller?
Yes.
Director Karcher?
Aye.
Director Olson?
Aye.
All right. No discussion items. Our next Board of Education meeting is scheduled for May 9th, 2022. And with that, it is 7:40.
Wait.
Yes?
I'd like to propose that in a future meeting, not the May 9th, but before the end of this year, so by the end of June,
fiscal year,
that we have discussion about the teacher recognition program that Craig proposed a few months ago, and that maybe in anticipation of that, that maybe you and maybe Carrie, if he's willing, meet with maybe me and Ken Schumann and hear your ideas and then begin to kind of create something that then could be brought to the full board for discussion and further development.
Okay.
I know we hadn't followed up on that idea yet, and does that sound like an acceptable approach?
Cool. And we are getting together for Teacher Appreciation Week Wednesday, and we're doing a little board gift.
So when we do that, as long as we don't discuss...
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right.
It's bonding.
Okay. Be ready to talk baseball and weather. And
yeah. And I want to go for a ride in your Bronco. Is it out there?
It is.
Yeah, it is.
Ooh. Is your property suitable for...
Mine? I'll make it, yeah.
We'll chat when we adjourn our meeting.
All right. With that, it is now 7:47, and I adjourn this meeting.